What is the future of God's creation now tarnished by sin? Hello, this is The Good Word. I am Dave Thomas. This today is our final in a series of 13 lessons or discussions we've been having on the subject of creation and the various implications of creation, particularly the biblical account has been our focus. We come now to the final question of what lies ahead for God's creation. We saw it as it came in pristine fashion from the hand of God and was declared to be good. We saw how it was damaged and corrupted by sin. We have talked a little bit about some of the implications of that and how God has acted to sustain and preserve creation through the ages. We talked about human responsibility for the environment. We talked about the Sabbath, a whole lot of things. But today we ask the question of what comes next and what lies yet in the future. I'm happy to have my conversation partners here for another occasion. Alden Thompson, a biblical scholar, and Bob Cushman, a scientist. Gentlemen, what lies ahead of us and what lies ahead of God's creation?
Well, I'm looking forward to a restoration of a world where nature, if it were, will be pure in its unsin-tainted form that, as a scientist, I can better understand.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that's above and beyond the personal impact. But taking that into consideration, thinking about studying a universe that hasn't been tainted by sin and understanding even in greater depths God's creative power and
so
and genius.
You're not going to leave your scientific curiosity on planet Earth and just let it stay here, Bob?
Absolutely not. He gave it to me. Why would he want me to leave it here?
That's a good thought. So, Alden, what lies ahead of us?
I like to think in terms of a new creation. It's an Old Testament passage, Isaiah 11, God's vegetarian kingdom, where nobody eats anybody else. The wolf shall live with the lamb. The leopard shall lie down with the kid. They will not hurt or destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth will be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea.
Hmm. Yeah, and of course the New Testament passage that's the premier one is Revelation 21, the first five or six verses, where there's that wonderful projection forward to a new heaven and a new earth where the former things are passed away. And I thought it might be worth spending a little time talking with some degree of specificity about just what it is that's going to be restored. And Bob, you already mentioned that the natural world itself will be restored. What else might be restored on that day?
Well, I'm curious, from a theological perspective, what is the need for a new heaven? Is it simply that heaven is being transformed and transferred to earth, or is there another need? I mean, if sin originated in heaven with Lucifer's fall, is there an element of that that requires or provides opportunity for the creation of a new heaven, or is that simply...
I think it all depends on how you interpret the word heaven. And that, by the way, in all these discussions about creation, I've seen a lot of articles about the word day, mm-hmm. but I've seen very few, if any, on the question of the word heavens. And I do not think that the writer envisioned a cosmos like we have, mm-hmm. a vast universe. I think he was thinking more in the cosmological terms of his day, where you have several heavens for the stars and the birds,
right.
and that's what he had in mind, that those heavens would be restored because they've been damaged by sin. So whether that extends to the place where God lives, I think is an open question.
Well, Romans 8 talks about the restoration of the creation. He says the whole creation has been groaning in labor pains until now. And I think he's really on to something there where he says, for we were saved by hope. Now, hope that is seen is not hope, for who hopes for what is seen? But if we hope for what we do not see, we wait for it with patience. Mm-hmm. In other words, there has to be a sense in which whatever is in the future, we can't imagine it, but we can live in hope.
Yeah. Yeah, and as I think about this, I think about things like health. You know, we enjoy good health a lot of the time, but there are some people who wrestle with chronic illnesses and there is no hope of their recovery. and I've talked to many of them, that this hope of this new world is very powerful. I think of the restoration of relationships. All of us have lost loved ones. And to think of that restoration is wonderful. I think of people who have infirmities, deformities of physical body. My own father-in-law, who is now resting, suffered for many years from a debilitating disease that cost him mobility. And I can remember that whenever the subject of heaven came up, one of the great longings he had was to have his body made whole. What else? I mean, I suppose the grandest one, and perhaps the one that intrigues me the most, is that the realization that the relationship between God and human beings will be fixed, because we talked earlier on about how in Eden God would come down and talk with the beings he had made. And Bob, you had mentioned the interaction of intimacy, and wow, it's astonishing to see that that will be restored.
God himself will be with them and be their God.
Yeah.
That's the promise.
Yeah. Yes. And so this whole question of the misunderstanding or the misapprehension of God will disappear. Mm-hmm. You know, you had said, Alden, in one earlier week about how people became afraid of God. Mm-hmm. This problem will disappear.
Yeah. And the amazing thing in Revelation 21, there was no temple there. See, in many ways, a temple is to protect you from the sense of holiness. You have the sanctuary, the court, most holy. I mean, the holy and then the most holy.
Yeah, you don't have to deal with God directly as a mechanism.
No, it's direct, as it is in the Garden of Eden again, yeah. Except now there's no fear.
Yeah. Wow.
Because the temple is where God is. Mm-hmm. There doesn't need to be a physical temple.
Right.
Yeah. It's strange. You know, death will be gone, and I have this thing in my own family because my father's father is buried outside Washington, D.C., and his mother's buried in Michigan. Just because of health care, and, you know, they ended up dying, and there was no money to bring them together. And here they were married for 65 years. And, you know, I've said to my father many times, Dad, I don't like that. Just in my mind, they've been together all their life. Why are they? And he says, well, on the resurrection morning, they'll be finding each other real quick. Yeah. Is there any personal element to this the new heaven and new earth that intrigues you?
Well, I think sometimes when I think about this and living in that environment or situation, that God probably has a sense of humor. And those who I may be surprised to see there are probably going to end up being my next door neighbors. And they may be surprised to see me there too. You know, I think God sees the big picture. And sometimes we get frustrated with each other at the little things.
Yeah.
But you know, I think restoration of relationships goes beyond even familial relationships.
Oh, yeah.
To those relationships that we've had difficulty with here on earth.
Yeah, I wonder how those will be fixed. Any personal reflections, Alden, that come to you here? Any things that you particularly...
Oh, there are lots of questions I have which I don't have answers. One of the things that's kind of a haunting question is, what about people who've lived together for a long time as husband and wife? One dies, then there's a remarriage. I would find that troubling after living with my dear wife all these years and then to get married again and to ask that question, well, what's going to happen in the new earth?
Well, that question arose in Jesus' day, I think.
But Jesus didn't answer it, really. See, that's the funny thing about it.
He said there won't be marriage. That doesn't mean there won't be close connections between people, though.
Well, one of my colleagues who pointed out, it was the Sadducees who asked that question. And he says, in the resurrection, who will be his wife? And they tied it to the old, you know, there were seven men that died. And Jesus said, and you have to see this as one of his questions where there is a twinkle in his eye. He says, well, in the resurrection, which you don't believe in, they will be like the angels, which you don't believe in either.
Oh, the Sadducees didn't believe in angels either?
No.
Oh, my.
So he didn't really answer their question.
I see.
So what I have convinced myself that whatever will be there will be far beyond anything that we can imagine.
Yeah, well, Paul says that, doesn't he?
Yeah. And you know, when we were young, I think many of us thought, well, we don't want the Lord to come just yet. You know, we want to get married, you know, because we had this picture that
we want to finish a degree or we want to do
whatever. Something. Yeah. Not too soon, Lord. You know, we have things to do. But as you get on in life and you see the pain that everyone goes through, I've had enough.
Yeah.
As much as I enjoy working with my colleagues, with friends and people here, I'm ready to go home.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember when a 92-year-old woman, I was an intern, a ministerial intern, a 92-year-old woman asked me to pray that she would die, and I was shocked. How could a person make a request like that? But, you know, as you say, you know, the thing that I look forward to the most is the disappearance of this intrigue that we as human beings have towards sin. We are tipped towards sin, and sometimes deliberately and sometimes inadvertently we tumble into it, and it's wonderful to think that that tendency will be gone, won't be there anymore. I think we would be remiss if we didn't point to the fact that there is, at the end of time, this question about the eradication of sin, because by the time you get to the end of Revelation, sin itself is destroyed, mm-hmm. and those who perpetuate sin are destroyed. It raises some big questions about God. Any reflections on that in the last minute or so that we have here?
Well, I like to think, instead of God tampering with the machinery, flipping a switch so that nobody can do it anymore, he has a huge video palace. If anybody has any questions, let me show you some videos of what it was like when sin was in charge.
Yeah.
And I think it's a question of an awareness.
Yeah, you're talking about what will prevent sin from coming again, yeah.
Yep. It seems to me an awareness of people, we don't want to go there again.
Yeah.
We've had enough of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a big tension in the universe between love and justice. Mm-hmm. And I think it plays out in the experience of God. And, you know, if God is too merciful, then justice is destroyed. If God is too justice-bound, then love and the people whom he loves are destroyed. And so it's fascinating to me to realize that God has managed that dynamic in such a way as not only to offer a way of escape, but also to offer, to preserve personal integrity and volition. Mm-hmm. And how you gain willing compliance in the midst of trouble and distress is something that fills me with a great deal of wonder.
And I think probably the answer to that question, and, you know, Ellen White, among others, say that, you know, we will ponder the meaning of our salvation throughout all eternity.
Yeah.
But what God did for us at the cross through his resurrection is a mystery transcending all others, and it brings a great deal of awe.
Yeah. And I think Paul refers to the fact that even with all of that, God found only a narrow way of escape. So the problem of sin is huge. But, well, gentlemen, thank you. This has been a pleasure to be dialoguing with you for these 13 weeks, talking about creation. I'm quite sure we have not covered all there is to cover, but perhaps we have sparked enough discussion. My thanks to Chad Ofterhaar, who has faithfully stayed by us and worked on these. And my thanks to those of you who listen to Good Word. We appreciate this opportunity to dialogue. For now, for Good Word, I'm Dave Thomas.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.